You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
When you're talking with old friends like Mark Weber in the first hour and Roger Devlin in the second, do you just run out of time? There was quite a bit I left on the table that I had in mind to talk with Mark about. We just didn't have the time to get to it. And one really important thing that I wanted to address with Roger, actually it was something that I told Roger about an hour before the show that we would be sure to get into, but time ran out on us as well, as it so often does. I mean, commercial talk radio is a cruel master after all. But one of the things I wanted to get Roger to comment on, really either of them would have been wonderful to have commented on this, is that in this age of censorship and repressive tolerance and oppression, the fact that we are now having better and more well-attended and regular events, I mean, truly professional events now. My background in this movement goes back to, as you know, 1999 and 2000 with Pat Buchanan, and then my own race for the Tennessee State House of Representatives in 2002, and then in 2004 we started the radio program. So I've got about nearly a quarter of a century under my belt now, almost. But you go back that far, and the only events on the annual calendar, you had American Renaissance and the Council of Conservative Citizens. Now, they would have annual events, and you would have a few more here and there, sometimes, not regularly, but maybe something would pop up here and there. But now, even in this age where the amount of opposition is so much more ardent and restrictive than it was then, and yet still you are having more and more events, more top shelf, high quality people breaking through than at any point during my career. That is entirely encouraging. We didn't even mention the fact that AMRIN is still forthcoming. You've got the American Renaissance Conference coming up in August. I'll be there. The 11th through the 13th, you had the VDARE conference, which just happened last weekend. I mean, Roger was there. I had a whole segment aside for Roger to talk about his takeaways from the VDARE conference. We didn't even get to that. There are so many now, you can't get to them all professional, all elite in terms of the attendees and the speakers. And even with our best efforts last week and tonight to cover as many as we could, we have still left some on the shelf. And I think that's a wonderful problem to have. But nevertheless, that was something that I had intended to cover with Roger. We didn't get a chance to get to it in the second hour. And so we'll make mention of that fact now in our third hour as we transition into another first-time guest. Now, this is something that excites me even after all these years on the radio. We have our program mainstays. You've heard from two of them tonight, people that have been appearing since at the very first year we've been on the air. But this year, even since the first broadcast in January of the current year, as it were, we have had a number of fantastic first-time guests, including a number of fantastic first-time guests who are young. And gone are the days where yours truly, as a middle-aged man, is the youngest person in the room. No, we have some fantastic top-shelf activists and advocates who are far younger than I even, who are doing great work. And we're going to introduce you to another one of them right now. Marty Phillips. Marty Phillips is the author of two popular works of fiction that have been published by Antelope Hill Publishers. You hear their ads on our program regularly. His two books, Let Them Look West, and his most recent book, Millennium. And he will be with us right now. He is with us right now to discuss these two novels. Marty, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's very great to have you on tonight, and always great to have anybody associated with Antelope Hill with us. So I've got your bio right here. We're going to read through it in just a moment, but tell the audience as you would and as you wish, anything you can tell us about your life and your background for a public setting, as a means of introduction, and then we'll move on to your books.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a conservative family in rural America, and so coming of age and how the culture and the politics has changed since I was very young has definitely had a profound effect on me. And it was one of the things that inspired me to write was living through all of these just vast and sudden changes in the world, particularly after 9/11 and the rise of the security state and then the shifting demographics and immigration. I think people of my generation really at a young age got to see things just change. And from what we had experienced in our somewhat stable childhoods, very radically and very very clearly. And so that was one of the things that inspired me to write, was observing these kind of sweeping changes and trying to make sense of them.
So I was born in 1980. And if you look back from here to there, 1980 almost looks like the halcyon days of the American experiment. I mean, it's almost like the 50s compared to what we are and where we are now. If you don't mind showing your card here, Marty, when were you born exactly?
I was born in 1992.
All right, so 92. I mean, so now 92. You grow up in this increasingly degenerate age in which all of our institutions by then have fallen, obviously, whether it be academia, the church, government, universities, media, I mean, you name it. I mean, they've all gone awry. And you have this tremendous amount of pressure on you to conform to the system and its narrative. Where was the escape hatch? I mean, at what point did you see and understand that as a young man born in 1992 that this is not right? We've got to find a better and a different path. How did you escape the tide of the rest that the rest of society is currently adrift upon?
Well, there's a number of factors. The first is, as you said before, most of the institutions, if not all of them, had definitely been taken over by people with ill intent by that point. But even between the early 90s and today, the observable difference in how openly people use these institutions for very negative things was still not quite so bad as it was now. And so I think while still somewhat young, I am old enough to have seen just the kind of the hind end of that 90s kind of wholesomeness that was still being presented
Yeah, I mean, even 92, I
near the
remember
end of the
being
decade.
and let's skip this first break because I want to give Marty all the time here. I had a little bit longer introduction than I had intended, but we'll take the bottom of the hour break. But yeah, I mean, 92, I was 12 years old in 92. I turned 12 years old in the summer of 92. My birthday was actually just 2 days ago. So the summer of 92, I turned 12 years old, and it was a world apart from where we are now. And so I can't even imagine. I mean, being born in 80, even only a decade prior, it seems it would have been quite a bit harder being born 10 years or certainly 20 years later, if you're born in the early 2000s, to have, taken a different route, although a lot of people now are doing it. And so again, Marty, go back to that. How did you do that?
Well, it's interesting because the internet has caused a lot of negatives in our culture, I would say. The things that are bad about it in some ways are things that can be good about it. And the big factor there is the ability to put like-minded people together, people who think the same way. And so while it does allow different groups of people who have very bad ideas into one place to combine forces, it also lets people who are maybe young and isolated and more on the right or more reactionary or traditional find that there actually are other people out there who have the same views, even though in our general culture around us, sometimes it can seem like everyone's just marching to the same beat of the same drum, and it's very difficult to approach people because you're not sure if they're going to be someone who agrees with you or someone doesn't. And things are so tense right now around those things that you don't know when it's necessarily safe to even bring up some topics with some people. So while there's many negatives about the internet, one thing about my generation was we had it at a pretty young age, and so you can actually find people with similar ideas to you if you're fortunate. And that can be kind of a morale boost.
Now, folks, we're talking with Marty Phillips, who has two works of fiction, and we'll get into the importance of works of fiction in just a minute, in a quick minute. Published by Antelope Hill, our good friends at Antelope Hill Publishers. And now, Marty grew up in the rural hinterlands of America, spending most of his time reading when not outdoors. And ever since he was young, he always wanted to be a fiction writer. As a child of the 90s and of the early 2000s, he experienced the loss of a coherent and constructive culture just as he was coming of age. And this had a profound effect on him. He's not a political person in the sense that he doesn't involve himself in the mechanical functions of politics or political activism, but he understands that his purpose is to write stories that contain themes and aesthetics that stand in opposition to the spirit of our age, which is increasingly anti-beauty, anti-civilization, and anti-order, and more recently, anti-white. Through his work and through his activism, Marty hopes to inspire and entertain people, and I think that's important too, and that should not be discounted, entertain people who reject the oppressively ugly culture that we live under with an alternative vision that appeals to the ethics and ideals that are rapidly being lost to future generations. You know, Marty, I had written one time, or had said before, I guess, that beauty is where egalitarianism goes to die. Everybody knows what a beautiful woman looks like. Everybody knows that if you go into Target and you see these obese women as the swimsuit models, that's not what we're talking about here. But I wonder, though, you being a little more than a decade younger than I am, and which is still not necessarily young. I mean, you're in your early 30s now, but do you believe, as I believe, that if and when, and when I think the tide turns and the path to prosperity, the path of least resistance, the path to social acceptance means adopting our viewpoints, that most of society will just fall in line? I mean, have you witnessed that at all, or do you believe that these are true believers in that ugly and obesity is beautiful and having no standards is better than having standards? Or don't you think it's easier for society to fall back in line with the truth and with our message than the message of the current regime?
I think there's some truth to that. I think there's other factors at play. I think that technology and social media and these platforms that people spend so much of their lives on has this kind of warping effect when it comes to how people view the world and what people even see as beautiful in the first place. And so in order for people to correct back to, I get a normal system of what is beautiful, what is not, what is good and healthy, what is not, I think that some of these platforms that get a lot of very resentful and unhappy people together in one place and harness that negative energy to create these movements that we've seen only accelerating with the increased use of technology. I think there's going to have to either be a very purposeful stepping back, realizing that these things aren't healthy and that they can only increase negative trends, or there's going to have to be some kind of, I wouldn't say like technological collapse, but there's going to have to be some correction, whether it's purposeful or whether it's unintentional.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, circumstance will have to change. Maybe we need to suffer more. I believe that we will. I mean, obviously, it's not going to turn on a diamond for no good reason. There will be, I mean, maybe it's a nuclear war with Russia. Maybe it's an economic collapse. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's a Deus ex machina type of event that we can't even foresee, but something will have to change. But when it does, I don't think that our message is that far removed from what people are willing to accept as some people may hope for, that our enemies may hope for. But let's move now to your work. Now that we've established yourself as a younger author and advocate, works of fiction. I mean, so much of our movement is dealt with policy and politics and issue-oriented books or autobiographies. It seems as though works of fiction aren't that high on the totem pole, but I think that it is very important that our side adopt an interest in the arts in order to reach people. And that's, of course, where fiction comes in a part. And we had earlier this year, back in February, I believe, Spencer J. Quinn, who authored the book The No College Club, which was a work of fiction. And increasingly, I'm interested in promoting people in whose books are works of fiction, because I think that that's an important part of the puzzle. So why works of fiction, Marty?
I'd say works of fiction primarily because that's what I grew up consuming so much of. I spent a lot of time reading, and some of it was historical books about either American history or ancient history and that sort of thing. But I also spent a lot of time reading just either pulpy fiction or the classics. And the books, I realized, that had the most profound effect on me as far as making me want to dream of something better and imagine most evocatively a better world or a more beautiful world tended to be fictional books. And that could just be me and my approach to reading and what I prefer to read, but that had a very profound effect on me. And I wanted to see if I had the capability to replicate that for other people and have them get that sense of inspiration and wanting more and saying that there are better alternatives through that medium.
Well, again, let's double down on this question. How can and how do works of fiction reach our people in ways that works of history and works of practical matters that we're dealing with in the here and now reach them? And how has the enemy been able to use works of fiction to further their cause?
Yeah, there's kind of a fine line when you're writing about political elements in a fictional setting. There's always the conversation about, okay, am I writing something literary for its own sake, or is this propaganda? And if it is propaganda, does it really matter if what I'm saying is something that's good and should be striven for? But what I tend to see is when people on the left or people who have grievances with a functional society tend to write, it comes across as very, very stilted, and there's not much inspiring about it at all, really. And you can see, if you walk into any independent bookstore, you can definitely see what's being pushed. All these fiction books that are clearly have an aim that is along the lines of where our culture is going and where our leaders certainly intend for our culture to go. So fiction has been used very effectively, whether it be, you know, the Marvelization and the Netflixization of culture when it comes to video entertainment, but also in the world of books and of fiction as well, by people on the left. So I think it's important to try and get what interest you can from people who are interested in reading fiction and see if there's a chance to divert them to something that's a little more noble, perhaps, and might give them ideas that are in the right direction. But definitely it being used by the wrong sorts of people. If you walk into any independent bookstore, that's clear just from taking a quick glance around.
Well, we have to use every means at our disposal. I mean, we have to use talk radio programs such as this. We have to use political, traditional political means. We have to use works of fiction. We have to use arts, movies, plays, stage productions. I mean, you name it. I mean, everything needs to be. We have to throw the kitchen sink at the transcendent narrative of our day, and see what sticks. Because that's the thing: people accept messages through various means. Some people prefer to read. Some people prefer to listen. Some people prefer to see. And we have to have something available. However people prefer to receive the message, we need to have capable people like Marty ready to deliver it. And if works of fiction, novels are their preferred method, well, then we've got that covered. And so when we come back from our next break, we're going to talk about two of the most popular works of fiction that have been published by Antelope Hill Publishing, Let Them Look West, which was Marty's book from 2021, and Millennium, which actually just came out last month. But Marty, how did you link up with our friends at Antelope Hill? How did that collaboration come about?
Well, I actually, I had ordered one of their books. I think someone shared their Twitter account with me, I think, and I ordered their book, Scott Howard's The Transgender Industrial Complex, and I read that book, and I actually loaned it to some of my family members, and they liked it too. And so as someone who was interested in writing, when I finished my first manuscript, I sent them a copy of it and asked them if they were interested, just because I was impressed by their formatting, their work, and how professional it was, and the quality of that book that I had ordered from them. And so that's initially why I reached out to them originally, and luckily they were interested.
Well, and luckily for all of us that they were, and when we come back, now that we've gotten this introductory segment put behind us, not that we wanted to rush through it, it was our honor to do it, but now that you know Marty a little bit better, we're going to talk about his two books, available now at antelopehillpublishing.com, and we'll tell you about them all next.
Proclaiming liberty across the land, you're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jerry Barmash. The leader of one of the most feared mercenary organizations on Earth has reportedly struck a deal to halt the Wagner Group's march on Moscow, avoid treason charges, and live in exile in Belarus. The move comes a day after news that Yevgeny Prigozhin had marched his troops to within 120 miles of the Russian capital. Military analyst Mike Lyons tells me there are still uncertainties.
And what happens to the mercenary group, the Wagner Group? Where do they go? Are they become part of the regular Russian military now? Lots of unanswered questions here.
Lyons says the short term will be telling for Russian President Vladimir Putin.
I think the next few hours, 24, 48 to 96 hours, will likely tell what happens to him, whether he tries to consolidate power or what.
The White House is monitoring for any changes. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan is accompanying President Biden to Camp David. A majority of Americans don't like that the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade.
According to a recent NBC News poll, 61% of Americans disapprove of the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade that occurred 1 year ago. Additionally, slightly more than half of the respondents stated that they strongly opposed the Dobbs decision, which effectively transferred the authority over abortion rights to individual states. The poll also showed that these perspectives do align with party affiliations. 92% of Democrats expressed their disapproval of the ruling, while 65% of Republicans said they approved. I'm John Schaefer.
Special Counsel Jack Smith is asking for the start of former President Trump's classified documents trial to be pushed back until December. The special counsel filed the request Friday due to security clearances needed to be obtained that will take longer than anticipated. Trump has pleaded not guilty to 37 criminal counts related to how he handled boxes full of classified documents. This is USA News.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer, and again, airfare...
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this? Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica,
Australia? Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
I have totally mismanaged the show tonight. I could have gone a full 3 hours with each of our three guests tonight. Mark Weber, Roger Devlin, and now Marty Phillips. I spent the last segment during the commercial break, reviewing the catalog at antelopehillpublishing.com. Folks, check it out, antelopehillpublishing.com. There really is something there for everyone, including these works of fictions by Marty Phillips. So your first book, Marty, was Let Them Look West, and I'm reading now from the introduction, and we only have a segment remaining with you. We'll have to move very, very quickly. This is your the description of the book. Rob Cohen has a mission he has reluctantly chosen: to interview the newly reelected Wyoming governor, James Alexander, a populist politician who has seemingly reinvented not only his state's politics but also its soul. No one could more strongly contrast with Cohen, a big city liberal journalist, than the rural Bible-thumping Alexander and his strained social and religious projects, which include constructing Mount Calvary, a monument to the crucifixion atop a man-made mountain. Cohen quickly becomes personally invested, and his trip to interview Alexander becomes a joust, pitting his nihilism against the faith of the people whom he meets as he seeks to discern the lie he is convinced hides at the heart of their righteous kingdom. At the same time, Cohen begins to realize that he himself is being swept up in the struggle beyond his understanding, orchestrated by forces out of his control. That is a gripping hook that would encourage one to buy the book, Let Them Look West, which is available at antelopehillpublishing.com, written by our friend Marty Phillips, who is making his debut appearance on the program right now. What motivated you? What gave you the inspiration to write such a story? It is a work of fiction. How did you come to it?
I came to it for two reasons. The first part is that I was inspired by my own kind of low church Protestant conservative upbringing. And so I wanted to pay a homage to that upbringing and kind of explore that world a little more. And the other thing that kind of gave me the idea was it's inspired in part by the book by Robert Penn Warren called All the King's Men. And that book has always fascinated me, the dynamics of the kind of embedded journalist character and his own personal scruples kind of playing against his interest in the politics that's going on around him. So it's partly inspired by Penn Warren's work, but it's also me wanting to pay homage to my upbringing and my parents.
It's a wonderful story, and it's certainly something that resonates with me, and I've written about this, I've spoken about this for so many years. I mean, how can you disassociate who you are with your upbringing, and me having been born into a small Southern Baptist congregation? Wonderful pastor. Everybody who's a regular listener of this program knows the story. My pastor, lifelong friend of mine, and I wasn't thrown out of the Southern Baptist Convention. My entire congregation, my entire church body was thrown out of the Southern Baptist Convention because my pastor wouldn't expel me as a member after the SPLC had written some things about me that the leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention didn't like. So it's a wonderful thing, and I can totally relate to the premise of this. And you put it to pen, and you got it published. And what has the reaction been?
The reaction has been very positive. even from people who aren't necessarily religious. I've had people write me emails about what they liked about it, even though maybe they culturally don't gel with that kind of low church conservative Protestant upbringing. I've had a lot of positive response from people who felt like it kind of gave them a little bit of a view into that way of thinking. And so it's been overall very positive.
I can certainly relate to that low church, rural Southern Baptist upbringing, because of course that was my background. It was a wonderful experience. I know that not everyone can relate to it. You know, I talk about this all the time. I can share a foxhole with someone who wasn't of that background, that is a non-believer, you know, in many ways far more quickly than someone who was raised in the church but has adopted all of the things that are killing our faith and our people. So it's an interesting topic, and one that we don't have time to get into tonight, but that is something that I can relate to. And it was a wonderful upbringing, and if I had not had that upbringing, I cannot say for sure if I would have been here tonight. It for me, it all it all came out good in the bake, I guess, because here we are, and certainly being raised in the church, being raised in that low Protestant, rural church, Southern Baptist upbringing did not inhibit my sense of racial solidarity or anything else that people are tuned in tonight to hear. This is a Christian broadcast. It is a pro-white broadcast. It is a pro-Southern broadcast. It is all of these things. But I could certainly relate to people who do not share the faith in some ways, in more ways than I can with people who were raised in the church but have taken on this culture of death that is presented to them by the establishment. So that is one book that you want to find out about at antelopehillpublishing.com. That is the book we were just mentioning. And now Millennium. Now, Millennium, I will only read one sentence from its description because I think that alone is enough for a hook. Millennium is your second novel, Marty, which was just released last month. And the opening sentence of the description reads, a World Trade Center worker finds himself in a time loop grappling with mortality and fate as he relives the events of September 11th, 2001. 1 minute, 2 minutes remaining. Give us the overall purpose of this book.
Millennium was my attempt to capture the millennial experience coming out of 9/11 into our current age. And tell that through different vignettes that are all kind of connected into one meta story that's about the millennial experience and life cycle into modernity.
If it's good enough for Antelope Hill Publishing, it's good enough for you, ladies and gentlemen. And I have thoroughly enjoyed my time these last 40 minutes, if you can believe it's been that long already, getting to know Marty Phillips a little bit better. We've exchanged a couple of emails in advance of the appearance tonight, but this is my first time to talk to him, your first time to hear from him, I guess. But Let Them Look West, 2021, Millennium, two works of fiction, both published by AntelopeHillPublishing.com, and it's two of their most popular works of fiction. And they're doing great work, and he's doing great work. Marty, what's next from you?
Well, right now I'm taking a little break after finishing the last book, but my plan is to complete another novel that I've been working on for probably almost 10 years now next. I don't know when I'll be done with it, but I've been making progress.
Can you give us a teaser about what it's about? I mean, 10 years, that's about a third of the life.
Yeah, well, it's a somewhat futurist novel about America in decline, and how different characters are kind of dealing with infrastructure and other things getting worse and worse in an attempt to live some semblance of normal lives.
I can't overstate my fandom of Antelope Hill Publishers and the people we've gotten to meet, the different authors and contributors that they have made present for this radio program. I very much enjoyed talking with Marty tonight, talking about his works of fiction that have already been published. He's mentioning now a forthcoming project, but Let Them Look West and Millennium, You can find them tonight at antelopehillpublishing.com. But Marty, do you believe, as I believe and as Mark Weber and Roger Devlin, who preceded you in the program tonight, believe that we can turn this thing around? I mean, is it all lost? I mean, we all see, we all have all of these reasons for being dejected and despondent, but do you believe that we can turn this around?
I think there's always a reason to have hope.
Well, one of the reasons to have hope is the fact that someone born in 1992 is producing these works that you can draw inspiration from and draw a message from. And we would encourage you to do just that by going to antelopehillpublishing.com. Let them look west. Millennium. Marty, a final word from you to the audience tonight.
I would just say keep your aesthetic sensibilities about you, whether it's if you look for edification in fiction or in art or through other avenues, never accept what's offered to you by our current culture as things that you should be entertained by. Always look for something better.
I think amen to that would be the appropriate response after the contents of Let Them Look West. Marty is the author, Marty Phillips. And Marty, great to talk to you tonight. I trust this will not be the last time, but I've thoroughly enjoyed the first time. And we'll talk to you again soon, as well as other contributors from antelopehillpublishing.com.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
One more segment remaining in tonight's live broadcast, the live broadcast of June the 24th, year of our Lord, 2023. Got to give all the praise that is due to our guests this evening, Mark Weber, Roger Devlin, and Marty Phillips, who you just got to know in over the course of the last hour. We've talked all night about how quickly the hours and the segments go by. How about how fast a month goes by, or a year, or a lifetime? I just had another birthday, so it's all sort of relative. But this is actually the last show of the month. When we come back with you next week, it is our 4th of July extravaganza. It's our last show before Independence Day, and the former United States Congressman Steve King will be back with us, among other invited guests, but this is the last show of June, so I have to make mention of the fact, I really do, believe me, I do, but that this is the last show of the month. It is the last time we have an opportunity to mention to you our quarterly fundraising drive. Now, I received an email just yesterday, in fact, from a gentleman who has been among our most steadfast quarterly donors, and he writes this: Dear James, the general financial situation has changed markedly and not for the better. Prices for everything have rocketed upwards in an unprecedented way. As a result, I must terminate my contributions. The situation is so dire that I cannot even send a small donation, though I am hoping for your continued success. And folks, I have to tell you, I have received similar notes from many of our donors. Our first quarter fundraising appeal fell short of the mark, short of our modest budget. And our second quarter returns are tracking to come in even a little bit lower than that. I get it. I sympathize to your plight. I face it as well. I'm a husband and a father. I've got three young children. I know the cost of everything, gas, food, goods, you name it. They've all gone up. It is tough. It is tough out there. The Biden administration has destroyed our economy. It has ravaged us with historic inflation. And it has prevented a significant number of our supporters from being able to contribute and give as they normally would. And the distress that our people are feeling is real. But I feel that. Believe me, I feel it as you do. But I want to keep the show on the air, too, so I have to be honest with you. We need to end the month of June on an uptick. The threat of having to make some difficult decisions in the future will very possibly become a reality if we don't end this month on an uptick. We don't need to go half a year failing to meet our operational requirements. So the costs associated with running this program increase every year, even if our contributions stall. And so I impress upon you tonight exactly how much you factor into our survival. This is the last week of our fundraising appeal. We are 100% listener supported. You matter tremendously. There are no contributions too small. I promise you that. Listener contributions of any amount are the only thing that shields us from constant withering assaults from the media and assorted leftist hate groups. I cannot overstate that. So your response or lack thereof makes a massive difference. And I would ask all of our regular, intermittent, or even potential first-time donors to consider supporting the work of TPC so you can continue to hear us and our invited guests, or else the situation could soon become critical. We have some great fundraising incentives, as we always try to give you, to induce your gift, your love offering, and whatever the level of support you can give, please do. And we hope to hear back from you before the end of the month. It really is important. And with that said, let's go now to our final contributor of the night, Scoop, Stan Scoop. Now, we can't give all the details here, but Scoop, you are at a remote broadcast. We mentioned this last week. As you know, Scoop is the host of what we affectionately call the Fourth Hour. Scoop, longtime and still Washington, D.C. correspondent of TPC, he follows us up. The hour immediately following us is the Fourth Hour, and he's getting the party started early right now at a live remote broadcast. Scoop, we don't want the location you're at to be targeted by Antifa and BLM terrorists. So we're not going to give the location, but you are in Washington, D.C. You are preparing to do a live remote broadcast of your program, and you're giving us a little sneak peek of it right now. So don't tell us exactly where you're at, but tell us exactly what you're doing.
Well, James, good evening, Political Cesspool family. I am at a remote location. Those on Twitter can follow me. But, James, I'm not worried because security at this facility is provided by the Second Amendment. So like in the movie, like in that Robert De Niro movie, Chaz Palminteri movie, A Bronx Tale, you can't leave now. So anyways, I digress. I'm at a function, lots and lots of good-looking people, if you know what I mean. James, I try to snap a shot, try not to be too perverted, but it's very hard when you're one Scoop Stanton. Anyways, sorry for the background noise. I am at a live remote location. People are going about their business, having fun. So if you hear, please bear with the noise. Anyways, I live in Washington, D.C., so you don't. Washington, D.C. has some of the worst public schools in the nation. Presidents Clinton and Obama sent their kids to a private school that charges so much, it's as much as an Ivy League college. Only the poor people send their kids to D.C. public schools. Well, instead of trying to improve standards and learning of the students destined to go through what's known as the prison pipeline, DCPS is teaching about women's menstrual cycle to both boys and girls.
I saw that.
It gets even better.
Especially to boys. That's especially important to boys, I think.
Right. And we're talking elementary school kids. And it gets even better. DCPS will
be putting... So for all the elementary aged boys who are going to be beginning their menstrual cycle, this is important to know in your public school education.
Exactly. And they're putting feminine hygiene products in the boys' bathroom.
Well, do they have cat litter in the bathrooms there? Because I know that there's this new fad called furries. All of the children who believe that they're dogs or cats that need to use the litter box on their bathroom breaks, they have that there in D.C. yet?
Not yet, but who knows? But, you know, instead of putting resources towards the 3 R's and teaching these kids what they need to know.
Reading, writing, and arithmetic, if you don't know what the 3 R's are.
Right. But instead of teaching these kids what they need to know to be successful in life, they're going to teach these kids, they're going to teach boys about women's menstrual cycles. I mean, and you know what? Years ago, D.C. had some of the best public schools in the country. Yeah, guys and girls go to Dunbar High School, Anacostia High School. I mean, these were the top high school. But you get the unions involved. You got these these people on the school board who don't have any kids, who have an agenda. They want higher office. And this is what you get. You get menstrual feminine hygiene products in the boys and girls boys' bathroom. And little Johnny learns about women's menstrual cycle when he's in second grade. But, you know, of course, nobody's batting an eye except yours truly. And unfortunately, my youngest kids still go to public schools. And Cal Thomas's words still resonate in my head almost on a daily basis. Get your kids out of public schools. Now, you might say, well, Scoop, what about homeschools? Again, you need to look at the teacher. So homeschooling my kids, that wouldn't work in the Scoop household. James, back to you.
Well, Scoop, tell us a little bit more about the atmosphere. I mean, we only have a few minutes remaining. You are doing a live remote broadcast tonight of your program. Remind us of that program and remind us of what's coming up next and what we, again, affectionately refer to as the fourth hour of TPC. That is Scoop and Walter Yerkes' program coming up next on Liberty News Radio Network. Scoop, where are you? Well, we know.
Well,
you can't tell us where you're at because we don't want to get attacked. But tell us what's coming up in the next hour.
Well, we got me having to vote Democrat in the county I live in. Yep, that's right. I voted in the Democrat
part.
Yes, I did.
What are you talking about?
I had a vote. Yes, I voted Democrat in the Democrat primary, even though I'm not registered to either party, for the simple fact we have district attorneys or Commonwealth attorneys here in Virginia that are absolutely just reprehensible. They're turning this place into a blank hole, as Donald Trump likes to say. And also, body mass index, something I have a problem with because I'm always on the wrong side of the BMI. But is it racist? Probably. And also, somebody went down to the Titanic, and the Titanic took 5 more lives this week. Due to some redneck engineering, we're going to talk about that.
Well, the guy that's another. We're actually going to do that next week. But the guy who crafted that submersible said that he was tired of 50-year-old white guys who had military experience telling him what to do. He needed some vibrant diversity input on how to create a submersible, and I would ask him if I could how that's working out for him. But that's obviously the biggest news story of the world this week, what happened there with the Titan submersible taking tourists at $250K a pop. $250K would fund me for about, you know, the rest of my life. But $250K would get you a death sentence on the Titan submersible because diversity was involved. But nevertheless, Scoop, we got a minute left. You had a live remote broadcast. If people stay tuned for the next hour, what are they going to hear? What are you going to be doing for the next hour at this raucous environment? We hear it in the background, and I'm jealous. Right. I got to tell you, I'm jealous.
Well, we have the guest of honor come speak for a couple minutes. It is now Donald Trump. He is in the district. Of course, I didn't get a ticket. I don't know why. But just talk about what goes on here in the district because, again, I live here, so you don't. So, but anyways, James, you should get rid of the people 50 and over. That'd be Keith, me, Eddie, Sean, Jim Lancia, Walter, and just about everybody else. Sam.
If I didn't talk to people that were over 50, I'd never talk to anybody at all, except maybe Marty Phillips, who was on earlier. But hey, is Walter going to be on tonight, or is he out for the remote?
No, he'll be on. He's taking a stretch kid to the studio.
All right, here we go. All right, so stay tuned. All you got to do is stay tuned. If you're listening live, you wait about 8 more minutes, and Scoop's going to be live from this event. You'll learn a lot more about it. But for everybody else, if you're turning out now, you got to go to bed. For Mark Weber, for Roger Devlin, Marty Phillips, and our good friend in Washington, D.C., correspondent Scoop Stanton, I'm James Edwards. Don't forget to donate before the end of the month because we want to be able to talk to you in July. Am I right? Good night, everybody, and God bless. Godspeed. Next week, God willing, with Steve King, our 4th of July extravaganza. The Congressman!